first half, second half, like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best foot, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together. Putting the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are recording on the evening of Tuesday, May 28th, 2019, one day after Memorial Day. I hope you all had a fantastic three-day weekend that included a Colorado Rapids win at home against the Columbus Crew. And on behalf of myself and my co-host, Rabbi Mark Goodman, Holding the High Line, would like to say thank you to all of the servicemen and women, past, present, and future, for your sacrifices, as we celebrate a belated Memorial Day. Rabbi Mark Goodman, how did you enjoy the three-day weekend?
I fled to Canada. That's how I celebrated the weekend. My family and I, we went to Niagara Falls on the Canadian side of the border, and we had a good old time. We spent obscene amounts of money on silly things like Ferris wheel rides and go-karting. And what else? My wife did a zip line over Niagara Falls with my son, and we did the Maid of the Mist ride, where you put on the big poncho and you like ride right into the spray of the falls. I'll add one more thing. It was a really funny thing. Since we were on the Canadian side, there were all these passive aggressive Canadian statements on the recording of the boat. It said something. We were passing by the American Falls, which is called American Falls, on our way to Horseshoe Falls, which is on the Canadian side. Horseshoe Falls is on the American Falls is on the American side. And the Canadian boat makes sure to point out that the American Falls is far less majestic, puts over far less water, and is also slowly crumbling. And in another, you know, couple thousand years, will not actually even be a waterfall, but rather just a series of waters falling over rocks in the form of a rapid, essentially. It's just a bunch of water that falls off a cliff. Let's not get too nationalistic about the damn thing. So God bless America. Our waterfalls are awesome, too.
Okay, yeah, there was definitely... I sense there was some symbolism or maybe some foreshadowing attempted there by the Canadians. Does Canada have Memorial Day, Mark?
No, they do not, which was great because on Monday we got to like go on all the rides and do all the things without any lines.
So it's like you were there on just a regular Monday, you know, like somebody going skiing on a Tuesday in the middle of winter and nobody was there.
Yeah, except there were still a bunch of Americans straggling home, and also when we came over the bridge to get back into the United States, there was quite a line because, you know, lots of people go over to... Lots of people flee to Canada for more Memorial Day, Matt. The best way to observe and respect America on our most sacred and important holidays is from a distance, is to look down at it and be like, oh, look, it's America from a distance.
Or I guess to go to another land and then annoy those people with your own Americanisms. You know, I guess I don't... Well, I'm trying to not say that, like, you invaded Canada on Monday.
No, we did not. But I will say two other soccer-related things. One is that my wife, she keeps doing this. She took my son, when she had some free time, to a store to buy a souvenir. He wanted a Canadian soccer jersey. Apparently, she couldn't find one. So she bought him a TFC Giovinco kit and shorts, which is pretty cool. It looks really cool, actually.
They only had Giovinco, though, even though he's left?
I guess. I don't know.
Isn't Iggy's favorite U.S. player Josie, though?
In youth sizes, you kind of get what you get, you know?
I mean, to be fair, Iggy's about the exact same size as I imagine Sebastio Giovinco is at full grown, so I guess that makes sense. It's an authentic kit, then.
And the other related story was that as I wore my Rapids jersey on Monday, and a guy looked up and he goes, "Oh man, rough season you're having." And I was like, "Oh, tell me about it, you know, but we're doing better." And he goes, "Yeah, you know, we were having a rough season for a little bit too. And then, you know, you turns out to be a Toronto fan. So we talked about that for a while, and you know, it was great. It was it's always fun. I mean, the reason you wear a soccer jersey when you're traveling is so that people can strike up conversations with you, and you can find the brotherhood of fellow soccer fans, and maybe have a pint and so on. So it was a good trip. It was all good all around.
Retweet favorite. Mark, shall we get to the footy?
Soccer.
Listeners, this past Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park for the first time in 2019, the Colorado Rapids were victorious at home. They defeated Columbus Crew SC by a score of 3-2. Tommy Smith opened up the scoring on a set piece off of Jack Price. Smith said post-game that the two had been working on that all this week and stayed a little bit longer after training in practice in order to work on that. Pedro Santos gets the Crew on the board just 5 minutes later after kind of a broken cross that goes through the middle, misses everybody. Santos cuts inside and then curls it to his left, I think doing what I think Rapids fans dream of Dylan Cerna doing on a regular basis. In the 7th minute of stoppage time, because there were so many injuries in this first half, Mark, there were 9 minutes of first half stoppage time. I can't remember the last Rapids game I saw that many minutes of second half stoppage time. Jonathan Lewis opens up his burgundy and blue account after a great run through the middle of Sam Nicholson, just completely torching the holding midfielders and the center backs of the Columbus Crew. 9 minutes into the second half, Giassi Zardes gets on the board with a deft touch, a one-in-a-million touch by Giassi Zardes standards, off of a pass from Federico Higuain, and then substitute off the bench 1 minute before full time scores an absolute banger for me, the goal of the week. Rabbi Mark Goodman, your thoughts on this win? And I mean, do we even want to do good thing, bad thing, big thing, or do we just want to talk about how relieved it is that the Rapids now have won 2 games in a row, more points in the last 2 games they had gotten previously in all of the season combined?
I mean, you know, the good thing was we Jonathan Lewis looked great. The really good thing was that the back line was able to, you know, sort of keep the game together despite not having Lalas Aboubakar on there, who was, you know, in his first game was just a total revelation. But man, I mean, Jonathan Lewis is so much fun to watch, and he is so, so good on the ball. And it's just an absolute joy to have a guy like that. But you know, to have Nicholas Mesquita come on late and then just score a banger from distance is, it's just very heart lifting. That's not a phrase. That's not a word, is it? It's just, you know, I think we always have players who we don't think are going to be full-time starters. And when the management tries to fit them in and make them a starter and they don't turn out, for a guy like me, and I, you know, I think I have I'm guilty of this a lot. I want to say, I told you so, but it sucks to say I told you so. It's no fun to say I told you so when we're bad, right? So for Mesquita to come on in a sudden role and play his part and do a good thing and win the game and be like, yeah, you know, and on some level I'm saying, I told you so. He's an excellent role player. He's not a dependable go-to starter, but if you bring him on late, he'll do good things for you. So that's my goodish, biggish thing, Matt. What do you think?
No catastrophic defensive mistakes. I tweeted out after the Crew second goal, the one from Zardes that was him touching it just around Tim Howard, and Declan Wynn was trying to keep was trying to stay between him and the goal, and then Tommy Smith was more was closer to the edge of the box and around Federico Higuain. I initially tweeted that I thought that Tommy Smith was more at fault on the goal than Declan Wynn, and I mean, at that point, with the level of touch you had and just the angle and everything, I'm not sure with the distance and reaction time there was much that Tim Howard could have done, maybe giving a shout to one of his two center backs anticipating the play, so to speak. But in hindsight, looking back on it the last couple of times, and I'll include the Pedro Santos goal as well, those were just two fantastic goals. One of them a great individual effort by Pedro Santos, who's been fantastic for the Crew this season, and the other just really, really good link-up play between, I would say, the best assist man on Columbus Crew and probably one of, albeit, you know, in his prime in MLS, was one of the best number 10s in MLS in Pipe Higuain, and Giassi Zoris, who scored 19 goals last season and just finally, in my, for my money, earned his DP contract with Columbus Crew. This wasn't like past goals we've seen from the Rapids where there's a catastrophic defensive error that opens up something. You know, there was nothing that the Rapids did to hurt themselves, to make it easy on their opponents to turn an okay opportunity into a good opportunity, or a good opportunity into a, they better score, otherwise this is gonna be the gaffe of the week. Like, we're gonna, like, if they don't score on this, we're gonna turn it into a gif to troll the team that didn't score on the Rapids. Those were just two fantastic goals, and in that, I talked last week about how we should measure our happiness based on our expectations. You know, I'm at the point right now where I go into every single game thinking, no matter the defensive combinations, no matter who's on the back line, no matter who the opponent is, the Rapids are going to make four or five individual catastrophic mistakes that are going to give the opponents opportunities, and if they manage to bury two or three of them, then the Rapids are going to lose. The Rapids didn't make any of those major catastrophic mistakes. They were just two really good plays by combined the three most effective offensive pieces for the Columbus Crew. So the defense was better on a whole. It was better in spite of not having Lalo Sapu-Bakar, who was ineligible to play in this game because of the conditions of the interleague loan, him being technically owned by Columbus Crew. And in spite of that, Tommy Smith, I thought, had a decent game defensively. Obviously got the goal, which was fantastic. Declan Wynn, I thought was okay, just fine. And, you know, I didn't notice Sam Vines much defensively through the whole of the 90 minutes that he played. And that's because he didn't do anything to make me notice him in a bad way.
Yeah. I guess if we're going to move on to bad thing, my one bad thing is players who you didn't notice, which is always a thing that you worry a little bit about. The one player other than Sam Vines, who I think we didn't notice, which was something of a trend that we've seen, is Diego Rubio, who started as either the second striker and or center attacking midfielder. It's very unclear as to whether I feel like the Rapids are playing a 4-2-3-1, but the lineups typically come out as a 4-4-1-1. I don't, you know, the differences between the two are subtle. But you could also make arguments that it's a 4-3-3, but that's a harder argument to make depending on considering how deep the wide midfielders play. But that being said, I think we gave Diego Rubio another chance. I didn't see a whole lot out of him. I'm starting to wonder whether he's just not quite the guy, or what exactly it is that's keeping him from succeeding with this team. So, that's, I guess, my only bad thing.
I'll comment on that, Mark. I was having a really interesting conversation with somebody after the match on Saturday about the differences between watching the game in person versus watching the game on TV, and in terms of the type of coverage that I like to provide, Twitter, podcasts, writing, and then just the things that I focus on. I prefer to have the full 360-degree views. I don't want to be limited to what the TV camera is showing me, or if I have access to multiple angles, then I'd want that. We talk a lot on the show about how formation is shorthand for tactics. There was clearly a back four. The fullbacks, I would say, under Connor Casey, this was their most cautious time. This was their most cautious game in terms of when they chose to go forward. That kind of makes sense when you're lined up against Pedro Santos on one side and David Akam on the other. I think it was clearly two holding midfielders, you know, with Jack Price being more of the number six and Kellen Acosta being the slightly defensive number eight. I would say Sam Nicholson and Jonathan Lewis were definitely wingers in this role. And I would agree with you that, you know, there could be a little bit of debate for my money where his touches were and where he was moving and what he was trying to do. I feel like Rubio was distinctly the underneath striker playing off of Kai Kamara rather than a central number 10. So I don't know if you'd want to call that a 4-2-2-1-1, if you just want to call it a wide 4-4-1-1 because of how the wing players are playing, or we could call it a 4-2-3-1 depending on how far pushed up. But in any case, that was the approach that Rapids had, and ultimately the goal was to defend with the back six, the four back line, and then the two holding midfielders, and then get the ball as quickly as they could from midfield out to the wide roll, effectively bypassing having to go press Guzman and Will Trapp that I thought was fantastic and allowed the Rapids to take advantage of the Crew's distinct weakness, which is where I'll get to my bad thing, Mark, is that, you know, you were not going to get a weaker version of the LA Galaxy two games ago than what you got with them without Zlatan, not having really a clear identity, weak issues at the fullback position, and not a lot of finishing from them. And I could not have imagined, save for something going wrong with one of the three attacking players who was on the score sheet that we mentioned a couple minutes ago, this being a weaker version of the Crew. I would, for my money, you know, I think fully healthy Harrison Afful on one side and Milton Valenzuela on the other are a top five fullback pairing and so critical to what Columbus do on both sides of the ball. Both of them were out of this game. When Milton Valenzuela tore his ACL in preseason, they picked up Waylon Francis from DC United. He was also hurt from this game. You had Nico Hansen, a very good young player, but a winger masquerading at a right back. And you had, Hector Jimenez, you know, a utility, central midfielder playing at left back. And then Jimenez gets hurt in the first half and has to get subbed out for Josh Williams. So you had, you know, a center back play, you had a true center back playing at the left back position. Obviously, I think Rapids fans should be excited about the last two games, the last two results, but both of them required goals in the final 10 minutes of the game, and both of them were on against opponents who were very distinctly weakened and were weakened in ways that the Rapids could very easily take advantage of them. As soon as I saw the lineup, I thought immediately Sam Nicholson and Jonathan Lewis, if they ball out, the Rapids absolutely get a win in this one, and it still took an 89th minute goal from Mesquita in order to get the result. By the stats, the numbers were about even. I thought the Rapids had more chances, but the Crew maybe have had a couple of better ones. I thought the Rapids were stronger up the middle. We could pitter about that for another 2 hours and still not come to consensus on that. So good for the Rapids to get a result, but really the last two games and the last 6 points were against, you know, wounded animals that they should have handled handedly. With that, Mark, let's go on to Big Thing.
I mean, it's a win streak, and we're starting to turn the narrative around. I think the most important thing for me is that it looks, whereas just 2 weeks ago, it looked like this team was in the running to make a shout for worst team in MLS history. I think we can almost safely say that those concerns are put to bed. I think this team will probably win two more games the rest of the season, at least. And so that's a really big thing to say we are not going to be historically bad. If they can get out of the top, 10 worst games in MLS history, which I think requires them doing something like win a total of 7 or 8 games on the season, then they are very much, they have accomplished a lot. So, that's my big thing.
You mentioned changing the narrative. I'm still not convinced whether or not what we've seen in the last couple of games under Connor Casey is actually this team current turning a corner. Could it just be the coach bump? Could it just be the level of competition that they were playing? But my big thing is right now for this team, for everything going on in the locker room, for the relief that people in the front office, including Porrig Smith, are probably feeling right now, it doesn't matter whether or not it's real. Remember, Mark, when we talked about it last year around this time of the season where the Rapids were, had an advantage, say, in the final 70 minutes of a game and then were giving up late goals. You know, they had a 2-1 lead at FC Dallas that turned into a 2-2 draw. They had a couple of draws that turned into losses. And I said it didn't really matter whether it was something systematic or something the Rapids were changing. Was it a focus issue? Was it a fitness issue? Was Hudson making a substitution that didn't really work? It didn't matter what was actually causing it. The point was whether or not the players thought that that was real. Were they thinking, oh gosh, here we go again, and then, you know, a win turns into a draw, turns into a loss. It doesn't really matter if the Rapids are actually getting better than this team, if some of the things that Connor Casey is doing or that the players' response from Hudson getting fired is actually them turning a corner or not. The point is that they think it is. You know, at some point, you have to fake it until you make it. I don't know if the Rapids are still faking it. I don't know if they're making it or not, but they have to be feeling better about themselves, and that has to create confidence. And now, as opposed to going out there and thinking, oh God, how do we not lose to Philly and then somehow get a draw against FC Cincinnati? Their psyche is probably, let's go and try and find a way to get a result against Philly and then pick up 3 points on Saturday in our first ever game against FC Cincinnati. And that, I think, makes a world of difference if nothing else psychologically, as you mentioned from where we were, 2 weeks ago. Shall we move on to previewing the Rapids' first DGW of the season, Mark? All right, listeners, we are currently 13-34 through the 2019 Colorado Rapids season. Unfortunately, even after picking up two wins, the Pits are still in 12th, bottom of the Western Conference, and still bottom of the Supporters Shield, for those of you keeping track. But they now have 8 points off of a 2-9-2 record and a minus 12 goal differential. You might be happy to know, Mark, that the Rapids no longer have the worst goal differential in MLS right now. This coming Wednesday at, is it PPL Park? No, it's Talon Energy Stadium now. At 5:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time on Wednesday the 29th, the Rapids will be playing at Philadelphia Union. This will be their first and only match of the regular season, against Dupland. The Union are currently second in the Eastern Conference, Mark. They have 24 points off of 7 wins, 4 losses and 3 draws, and a plus 9 goal differential. They have, however, struggled in their last two games. They got kind of an uninspiring 1-1 draw against Seattle Sounders a couple weeks ago, and they did lose to the Portland Timbers, in which they gifted Portland 2 goals. Granted, you know, Fernandez has been a fantastic addition to Portland, and they've got Diego Valeri, so make of that what you will. Alejandro Bedoya, the captain for the Union, did issue a conciliatory tweet on Twitter saying that it was all his fault, and the team's looking forward to regrouping on Wednesday. And then this coming Saturday at 6:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, an early kickoff, listeners, not the usual 7 p.m. for the Pids. They'll be taking on FC Cincinnati, the lone expansion team of the 2019 season. FCC are currently in 12th in the Eastern Conference, bottom of the conference, and second to last in the Supporters Shield, ahead of just the Rapids. They have 11 points off of 3 wins, 9 losses, and 2 draws, and a negative 14 goal differential, a worse goal differential than the Rapids have. And they've also struggled as well, Mark. They had a very narrow 2-1 win over the Montreal Impact, but other than that, it's been all losses since the middle of April. And in that, this will be the first matchup the Rapids have against another team that also fired their head coach. Alan Koch fired, I want to say within 3 or 4 days of Anthony Hudson. We will start with the Philadelphia Union, Mark. What do you see in the Union, and what do you see in this matchup on Wednesday?
The Union are getting it done with young players, young, exciting players that they brought up from their academy or drafted, like Jack Elliott, Austin Trusty. In defense, they've played Oliver Mabizo and Mark McKenzie, although McKenzie's been hurt. They've got a lot of depth. They also have Bethlehem Steel as their affiliate team, and they've been letting those guys kind of cure and get ready. The addition of Marco Fabian was supposed to be a big catalyst for them in order to generate offense, but Fabian is wants to do as a guy on the wrong side of 30 has been hurt a lot of the season. So they've been getting it done with the same guys in midfield that they've been doing it before, which is Ilsinho, Alejandro Bedoya, and Harris Madunyanin. And they're doing pretty well there, but the most important thing for the Union is that in their first, last season, they were getting absolutely zero production, from their strikers. They would put a guy up there and then he wouldn't do much of anything. You know, David Akam was missing everything last year. And now they've got, so a little bit more production happening. Casper Prisbilko. Is that am I pronouncing that anywhere near close?
I think you're pretty close. Yes.
Pretty close. Who is a Polish player who played, in the German league for the last couple of years, has come on and in 4 games he has 3 goals and he looks like the real deal. He's a kid. He's only 26 years old, but he's a big bloke. He's 6'4". And he can get it done with his feet. He can get it done on the run. He could get it done front post, back post with his head. He's a really talented, up and coming striker, and they really kind of picked that one out and did a really nice job, of that. If we see him, starting and striking again, you know, we could see, another week of the Rapids struggling to contain somebody. But the last thing that's really important here is to point out that this is one of those midweek to Saturday games. That means that Colorado and Philadelphia are both going to need squad rotation. They're both going to switch things up. If you're asking me who has a more proven deep team, there's no doubt that it's Philadelphia. They are already playing with a number of players who have really gotten some run. This season, almost all of their strikers have had two or three starts. Almost all of their, they've gotten appearances from three different goalkeepers already on the season. Their defense is generally set, but, they've got guys like Aurelien Collin, and Ray Gattis kind of stepping in. And, you know, you've got other players who have, MLS minutes from last season, Warren Cravall, Derek Jones, Anthony Fontana. It's a lot of depth, that they can trot out. So even if they went with kind of a B lineup, you know, with guys like Fafa Pico and Sergio Santos, or Corey Burke, I mean, this team is very, very deep, and they can even go down to, Bethlehem, pull up a couple guys, and see what's what. Matt, what are your thoughts on the Duke?
A lot of really good shouts there, Mark. I do want to address one thing. You did mention the goalkeeper rotation. I don't remember what it was, but Andre Blake got hurt, a couple of weeks ago, and then Freeze, their, other goalkeeper, actually got hurt the very next game, but Blake did play on the weekend against the Portland Timbers. I would imagine, unless there's really some curious thing going on, that Jim Curtin probably has him starting both the games, but I agree with you in terms of Philly being very, very strong up the middle. One thing that we didn't talk about them from a tactical standpoint, Mark, they were trying to be more of a possession team last year, and then obviously Ernie Stewart leaves and they have some changes in the front office. Jim Curtin comes back, but only on a one-year contract, and now they're a pressing team, and they're a pressing team in kind of it's, you know, on paper, it's a 4-4-2 diamond, but really it looks like a 4-3-3, or a 4-1-3-2 in a lot of ways, and the pressing has really worked for them. I'm kind of surprised that people in the MLS space aren't talking more about what they've gotten from an offensive perspective. Because you had CJ Sapong, who was one of the starters for them last year, get shipped out for basically Magic Beans and Chicago Fire. You know, he's banged in a couple good goals for the men in red. But then, you know, they have Corey Burke, who I thought had a couple really good runs last year. But then there's this weird situation going on, where he actually had to go back to Jamaica. He's from Jamaica, listeners. And there was something wrong with his visa, with renewing his residency or his green card. I haven't delved too much into this, and this gets into obviously some immigration legal stuff, of which neither of us is an expert. But apparently, like, he didn't commit a crime. It's nothing to where, like, the authorities are looking for him. But basically, he has to just go back and sit in Jamaica and wait for paperwork from the embassies to pass for him to come back to Philadelphia. He's allowed to come back on separate immigration, on a separate visa with Jamaica for the Gold Cup, but he technically can't play for the Philadelphia Union as his employer in the United States. He is allowed to be loaned to another club in Jamaica, or if he's able to get immigration status somewhere else in the Caribbean, or, you know, I guess not go to Canada, maybe, you know, do that. But that's kind of a weird situation. So it's been offense by committee, just because it feels like every couple of weeks there's a different guy coming in there. Fafa Pigo's had a couple really, really good runs for the Philadelphia Union. And then, Casper as well, the Polish guy whose name I will not try to attempt, has also been really nice. So the Union are different from a lot of other teams the Rapids have played in recent weeks, in that there's not one key offensive connection that it's if you are able to negate that, you will have a chance defensively. It was pretty clear from the game on Saturday that if you disrupt Federico Higuain trying to get to Giassi Zarias, and then somebody just picks up Pedro Santos, that you're going to be okay. It's not like that. There's no one talisman for the Philadelphia Union. They're going to have, you know, three or four guys who are going to be big on the offensive side, and any one of those is going to be able to score. So that means, to a man now, every single defender for the Rapids and Jack Price and probably Kellen Acosta are going to have to be aware of the group as a whole. The last thing that I will touch on, Mark, on the injury front, our mutual friend, The goalkeeper, Jonathan Tannenwald, did report this week that Sergio Santos was fully training with the team this week. And then Marco Fabian, who's had a pretty rough start to his MLS career coming to the Union in the offseason, was also back in training. Both are anticipated to be available for selection on Wednesday. Last thing that I'll touch on the Philadelphia Union front, Mark, I spoke to a club source for the Rapids earlier this week, and the Rapids have a couple of guys both going into the game against Columbus and then through the game in Columbus picked up a couple of knocks, and there's going to be a few key players who you would think would be regulars in the 18 when fully healthy who are going to be left behind from this trip. So we're going to see some squad rotation. I might have expected at the end of the game last week thinking that, oh, you figure the Philadelphia Union are home to the Rapids on Wednesday and then they have to go play at Minnesota United. Cincinnati does not have a midweek game. They have the whole week to prepare for the Rapids. The Rapids then have to play at Philly and then home to Cincinnati. I would assume with Philly, especially with what happened on Wednesday, that they would try to go for the win at home and then try to get a draw at Minnesota. Minnesota has to play midweek at Atlanta, so they've got, you know, it's going to be a bit of a cat and mouse game of who are you starting your starters for and who are you not starting them for. I would have thought that the Rapids would have gone with the first team against Philly and then Thursday morning figure out what you have to do in order to get a result against Cincinnati. After the information and sleeping on it, I think we're going to see more of a hybrid squad. You know, if Connor Casey's first choice 11 is, you know, a solid A team, let's say a 95th percentile, and then say, you know, the reserve team, say what we would expect if the Rapids were playing an Open Cup on Wednesday would be a C, you know, say a 75th percentile. I think both teams are going to be roughly an 85. Maybe one's a B plus and one's a B minus, but I don't think we're going to see all the starters in one game nor all the reserves in another. I'd expect Andre Shinyashiki to probably get at least 45 minutes between the two games. I figure probably no more than 100 minutes combined for Kai Kamara. Definitely going to see some rotation at center back. Would not be shocked as well if we saw Jack Price not go 180 minutes this week as well.
I'll add that I think, I could be wrong, but I think it's pronounced Kasper Schibilko, not Perzibilko.
Schibilko sounds right.
I feel like I've heard them say that on another podcast, but I feel embarrassed that I don't factually definitely know that, but nonetheless.
All right, Mark, shall we move on to FC Cincinnati?
Oh, please. I feel even more prepared on FC Cincinnati. Oh. No, seriously, because I just got off of talking with their podcast. I think it's called Cincy Soccer Talk, and they were really nice guys. So I'll tweet that out later if you guys want to hear me talk about the Colorado Rapids. But it's something that me and Matt haven't said, and to be honest, that Matt hasn't said better than me anyways over the last couple
thanks,
weeks.
Mark, and I'll be sure that Holding the Highline tweets that out on Twitter as well. FC Cincinnati are not a good MLS team, Mark. They are in their first year in MLS. Listeners will remember them from the noise they made while they were in USL. They won, I guess, I don't know if there is a supporter shield in the USL, but the last two seasons in USL, they had the best regular season record or the best point total in the Eastern Conference. They did not make it to nor win USL Cup in either of those two seasons. They sell out a bunch of tickets at Nippert Stadium, which is the home of the University of Cincinnati Bearcats, the college football team in Cincinnati, and that's where they're playing at least right now. They're working on a stadium closer to the riverfront with the border with Kentucky, and then close to, is it Great America Ballpark, and then wherever the Bengals play? Mark, does that sound right to you?
Sure.
Okay. So they're working on getting a stadium there. In any case, Mark, FC Cincinnati are very much built in the mold of other lower division expansion teams that we've seen come in. This isn't like Atlanta where their first year is as an MLS expansion team and they splash a lot of cash. Certainly not like what LAFC was last year or what they're doing this season. They're closer to a Minnesota United or an Orlando City in their first year. They still got a handful of guys from their USL team who've come up who are kind of their bench options. They've got a bunch of players who they held on to who are loaned out to I think there's a bunch of guys in Indy, and then I want to say a few guys in for Louisville City, question mark. You might know more about that than me, Mark.
Yeah, the only one that I can think of off the top of my head is Hassan Nadam, because I watched him play last week when he was playing for, oh, why am I forgetting right now? He's on loan to Charlotte Independence. Cause I was preparing, I did a preview for, Pittsburgh Soccer Now about them. And Nedom looked terrible. He just absolutely adrift as the right center back in a back three. But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
In any case, Marco, let's go through their lineup. Spencer Ritchie is their main goalkeeper right now. They have Kendall Waston, who is their captain. Costa Rican international listeners, you'll remember him from his time with the Vancouver Whitecaps. Would have spent last year with Kai Kamara there. It's mostly been, Nick Haglund, but it was, Justin Hoyt, this past weekend. They're mostly playing a 4-3-3 under their interim head coach, Yohan DeMay, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Caleb Stanko is one of their holding midfielders, as is Victor Ulloa, who listeners you might remember from FC Dallas, also now on FC Cincinnati. And then their big super draft pick, was the, Generation Adidas player Frankie Amaya, Mark, who was, I believe was not called up to the U20 World Cup and now is just focusing on trying to kill things as much as he can with FC Cincinnati. So you kind of got some rotating pieces in midfield, the defense that isn't completely solid. You know, one of the memes on FC Cincinnati a couple weeks ago after Alan Koch was fired was that they just had too many holding midfielders and weren't getting their attacking players on the field. You know, they have Roland Lamont also from FC Cincinnati. Fernando Adi, who is back after his run-in with the law that involved, adult beverages as well, that I assume has been resolved both legally and as far as the, league substance abuse policy is concerned. But then you also have guys, you know, like, Kenny Safe, for example, who can't even get into the 18, and then Kakuta Mane, who came back after spending some time in Switzerland. He was also on the Vancouver Whitecaps with Kai Kamara, I believe. And just there, I see this team, Mark, and I see a workmanlike but under-talented defense. I have no idea what's going on in the midfield as far as positional assignments and then what actual tasks are going to players. And I see an overemphasis on D-mids being on the, multiple D-mids being on the field simultaneously. And I see a bunch of guys in the attack who have MLS experience, but who are highly inconsistent. And that's also, that's all just jumbling up into really, really bad Cincinnati Chili that is, you know, last in the Eastern Conference right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I have not seen the team play under, DeMai over the last couple of weeks, but I'll say that under Alan Koch, the general modus vivendi of this team was sit deep, either kick it long or play it forward quickly, and hope to God you can break out with just two or three guys on the run and see what happens. And most of that happened from wide, and they were putting no guys forward in the middle. Whether they do that in Colorado or not and let the Rapids possess is anyone's guess. I don't think that that'll work for them, but I think you hit it on the head. The midfield's kind of a mess. There's no, nothing tying the room together. There's no consistency. The most reliable player for the team, according to the guys on the Cincy podcast, has been Frankie Amaya. But Kenny Saif has had some good games and then he's also disappeared. He's been played kind of as a striker or as a second striker when the reality is he's a center mid or maybe even an attacking mid. And then after that, you get guys like Victor Ulloa, Roland Lamas, Kakuta Mane, and all these guys kind of, who had good seasons in MLS in 2015 or 2017, but nobody who has said, like, I belong in MLS now. So that's, I think, a big problem for this team is that they have a whole lot of guys who are underwhelming. I'll say that, like, my favorite player on this team, is Emmanuel Ledesma, who I watched in USL last season a whole bunch. He's a very, stick to his foot kind of, I would call Emmanuel Ledesma, what's his name? Played for the Timbers, now plays for Atlanta. Darlington Nagbe. He's kind of like a Darlington Nagbe light in that the ball sticks to his foot and nobody can take it off him. And he likes to come in not from the middle of the field, but at an angle. You know, he's like a central midfielder who likes to swing to the wing and then cut in to create mayhem. That's Nagby's talent. Ledesma does that too really well, but he also doesn't get on the field much for them. He hasn't rated for their coaches at all, kind of like you said that Kenny Saif hasn't even rated. The last thing I'll add to all this is at center back, they've had real problems with Nick Haglund, who hasn't been particularly solid as a center back. Forrest Lasso also doesn't rate for their coaches, although I thought he was spectacular at the USL level. I think he should get a couple games run out. And then the last player that I think is kind of like, a real question mark who was underwhelming at the beginning of the season, but there weren't a whole lot of other options is Alvis Powell. Alvis Powell at left back can really leave you naked. He can really step up and make some terrible decisions and leave your whole back line exposed. He's had better games in the last couple games, but I don't really like to have a left back that you put out there and you kind of shrug as he trots out and you go, I don't know, man. So this is a beatable team for the Rapids. They absolutely – I would almost say, as much as this is a ridiculous thing to say, this is like a must-win game for Colorado. Like, if they can't beat this team who have never been to Colorado at home, then it's a bad indicator for the rest of the season. And the final thing I'll say about all this is there are lots of teams where we talk about altitude and altitude matters and blah, 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 blah. But so far this season, we haven't talked once about how the Rapids have utilized or even thought about utilizing altitude to get an advantage. This is a team you can use altitude as an advantage. A lot of their experienced MLS players who line up are older. This team does not play against any other teams at altitude, has not played against any other teams at altitude all season. They've literally never been to altitude all year, and they're playing a midweek game. So they're not playing a midweek game. They'll be playing a Rapids team that'll be playing that'll have a number of fresh players on the field because they will have to rotate the squad. So I do think that this is an opportunity for Colorado to do that thing where they are fresher and better in the 75th, the 80th, and the 85th minute than their opponent. Strike late and win. This is a 2-1 or a 3-1 win if Colorado plays their cards right.
Mark, not only has FC Cincinnati never been to altitude this season, in their entire club history, they have not genuinely been to altitude. With the size of the two conferences in the USL, there is almost no cross-conference play. So you can't even say, oh, FC Cincinnati, maybe they played a game against the Colorado Springs Switchbacks, or maybe they played at Real Monarchs. This team literally has not played a competitive game above 2,000 feet above sea level because they have not played any teams who have a stadium at that altitude or higher. And then even, like you said, Mark, even when you talk about the MLS guys who are familiar with it, they're old or they're just not conditioned to it. If there's anybody who's maybe conditioned to it, I remember looking this up when I wrote an article after Skelston Gashi signed with the Rapids saying that the Rapids could try and target players who are from the Alps because of the altitude and the similar markets in terms of stuff to do off the field would be Kukunamane because he was in Switzerland. I want to say for Grasshoppers, but I might be wrong. It might be one of those other Swiss teams. He's probably the most adept to it just because prior to joining FC Cincinnati, you know, all the teams that he was playing against and training with, you know, were in excess of 4,000, I think as high as 9,500 in terms of their home stadiums in and around Switzerland. But this is absolutely from, you know, this Saturday at DSG should be hashtag strength is altitude as much as any game is going to be this season. Mark, let's play a fun game. I'm going to ask that you not be looking at the standings or this particular stat on any of your browsers right now. How many goals do you think FC Cincinnati has scored this season? They have played 11 games. 14 games, excuse me. They've played 14 games. How many goals do you think they've scored?
16.
Less. They've scored 11. Where do you think that rates in MLS? 24 teams, where are they rated in terms of goal production?
Second to last.
Last place, they're in last. No team has fewer. They have the fewest number of goals. Do you want to guess how many goals the Rapids have scored this season?
20.
They have scored 20 goals. Can you guess where they are in terms of their offensive production this season? Let's say just in the Western Conference.
Oh, just in the Western Conference. 10th.
They're 8th. They have scored the eighth most goals in the Western Conference. FC Cincinnati have scored the fewest goals. There's a couple teams with 14 and a couple teams with 15. Most of those, however, have played fewer than 14 games. So the stats bear it out as far as their offensive issues. You know, I think an NFC Cincinnati fan might say, well, oh, we didn't have Fernando Adi because he was injured, and then he had the off-the-field incident that we don't need to go into detail on. But in any case, the stats bear out your comments on the inconsistency of the offensive pieces. This is a quintessential run-of-the-mill MLS expansion team that existed in USL that is not splashed for cash, where you're seeing, you know, a bunch of workmanlike players who are probably under-talented and not quite suited for this level, but were great in USL, and they went and the money they spent on were guys who they could afford that would ultimately require them to take a couple flyers on an aging Fernando Adi, a inconsistent Kukuta Mane, and then alone with a buy option on Kenny Safe, and that's probably a flyer, and then we'll see where it goes. And this team's playing like that right now, and obviously some of the comments that Alan Koch made that I think were as incendiary and demoralizing as, you know, the final comments that we heard from Anthony Hudson with the Rapids, you know, ultimately I think undid them, and now it's about them trying to figure things out. But I mean, you know, FC Cincinnati, you know, where they're at right now is, I think, where the Rapids were 3-4 games ago, where they've got to get a handle on something. Otherwise, this could go really south fast, and you could get all kinds of fighting. All right, Mark, let's get into an actual preview of this game. We don't have any Ask HGHL, so we can go a little bit longer on this. How do you think the Rapids will approach, from a squad rotation standpoint, these two games? How do you think stylistically they'll approach the games? And then give me your prediction on the results of the two matches.
Well, I think the most likely players to get some time, you can expect two fairly different back lines in these games. I would imagine that you'll see Declan Winstart at left back in one of the games and Sam Vines in the other. You'll see Keegan Rosenberry start at right back in one game and Sebastian Anderson in the other. You'll probably see Tommy Smith. You may see Danny Wilson and Axel Schoberg, all getting some run out. So that's there. I'd like to see Cole Bassett get a start. I'd like to see Andre Shinyashiki get a start, in one of these games too. And lastly, I think Nico Mosqueda, likely to get a start somewhere. It might be interesting to give him a try out on the wing, you know, on the right wing, to see what he can do out there. I think, you know, if in his career it's between developing more skills and finding other places of making an impact on a team, or being a permanent, you know, 75th minute sub as a attacking midfielder when your team is behind, you want to develop more skills, hypothetically speaking. So that's my prediction for how the team will utilize their players. Are there any players you think I missed, Matt, where there's a guy out there who you think deserves to be out on the field and needs to get a chance in one of these games?
I would be curious. I don't think this is likely, but I would be. I think that this is something that has to is at least pass the mind of Connor Casey and of Porik Smith. Kai Kamara is really the only true center forward you have on the squad. If you're consistent in wanting to have a true center striker, because, you know, Shinyashiki's definitely the underneath guy, and so is Diego Rubio as well. I wonder, with the game being midweek and also being in the Eastern time zone, that you maybe pull back Nicky Jackson for being in the 18 on Wednesday. But that's me really grasping for straws. I wouldn't be shocked if Kofi Opare is somewhere in there, or at least in the 18 for one of these games at the center back position. But I agree with you. I think Lalo Sabubakar probably gets one start and goes 90 minutes. I'd say the same thing of Tommy Smith, Declan Wynn, and then probably Axel as well. And maybe they fill out, the roster in other places. And I agree with you that I think, seeing Nicholas Mosqueda probably on the wing for one of these games. You know, I think there's going to be, I would put the over-under on number of players to go a full 120 in this week at probably like 5 or 6, and I might just barely take the over. You know, you figure Tim Howard's probably going to start. You know, Jack Price is fit. Maybe, you know, Casey doesn't trust Nana Boateng for 30 minutes. Maybe he starts there. You know, you maybe give Kellen Acosta a run out, but other than that, you know, I don't think I don't think we're going to see one center back go full 120 minutes. I don't think any of the four fullbacks you mentioned are going to go 120 minutes. I'd be curious to see if Casey puts Dylan Serna in a different role, just because we haven't seen Serna play under Casey, and maybe that's just with squad rotation. You know, he kind of gets fit into a role out of necessity. But, you know, again, I'm grasping for straws. I think you covered it pretty well. On to how you think the Rapids tactically will approach Philadelphia on Wednesday.
Tactically, I don't understand what Connor Casey's plan is yet, and I don't know that anybody can after two games. My sense is create from width, which is very different than what Anthony Hudson did. Create from wide midfield as opposed to create from wide fullback. So a kind of a flattish 4-4-2-ish thing, which has a real width. It keeps the defenders back and also keeps two central midfielders pinned deep like Jack Price and Kellen Acosta. You know, go with that, keep doing it. That is something that I imagine that they will just keep trying until it stops working, unless I'm drastically underestimating Connor Casey's skills of brilliance and intuition, that he has been preparing for this role as a head coach all his life and can tactically dissect every team and play to opponents' disadvantages and advantages every single time. My sense is that he's trying to establish an ethos for the Rapids, and that ethos is 4-4-2 with width. What do you think, Matt?
Well, I think Philly continues to be a pressing team at home. I think you go to Philly and I think you go flat 4-4-2 and you go low block with Jack Price and Kellen Acosta getting, you know, their black diamond kits a little scuffed up in midfield, and you just try and counter. And in that, similar to how we've seen teams trying to negate the New York Red Bulls from the last 18 months or so, I think you take away what Philly does well by simply giving them the ball. And then I think you do what you did to the Crew against Philly, where you get the ball in midfield and as soon as you can just get an outlet to the wing and let those wide players run. And if that means you got to reevaluate where Sam Nicholson and where Jonathan Lewis are from a battery tank, from an energy standpoint, after 60 minutes, then I think so be it. You try to nick something on the counter. Worst case scenario, just go straight one, route one with Kai Kamara. I think you try to make the game as ugly and as frustrating as possible for Philly, and you negate what they do well by simply not playing out of the back. And then I think there's probably going to be a restock on Thursday morning once they get back to Colorado, see where everybody is from a recovery standpoint. So it's probably going to be a wait and see, I think, for FC Cincinnati. But just given the way that they play and the fact that they're going to be at altitude for the first time in their history, let alone their first time this season, I have a feeling that FC Cincinnati is going to come here and bunker, in which case then, you know, I think you play out of the back again, try to go wide. I like the chances of Kai Kamara over the course of 60 minutes getting something on Kendall Waston or being occupied enough that some other defender, probably an Albus Powell against Jonathan Lewis or Nicholas Mesquita, is going to make a mistake that's going to open things up. So I think you go at FC Cincinnati with their biggest weakness, knowing the way that they play, and I think you try to neutralize Philly's greatest strength in the way that they want to play as much as you can by simply, you know, choosing to play a different style. And if that means it's ugly and uninspiring, then, you know, hashtag keep fighting. Let's get some Rapids thug life out there in Chester, PA.
Let's go. This was a game that I was originally slated to go to, and then it turns out that there's an Open Cup match. And also, I didn't really want to miss Sandwich Dragons practice. So I only have two more shots to go see the Colorado Rapids live this year. All of them involve a 5-hour each way drive. So my choices were Philly, New York, or Toronto. So I scratched Philly, so now I'm down to New York and Toronto. I'm really hoping that I can do at least one of those two games.
And that'll be New York Red Bulls, not Yankee Stadium, right, Mark?
I think so, yeah. So technically, I don't have to go even all the way to New York. I can stop in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. But I kind of want to go to that Toronto game. I think that would be really fun. I just need to double check and see what Jewish holidays might induce panic right before then, and also how much neglectful parenting I'll be doing in order to take a 24-hour round trip I also need to find friends in other cities who are willing to let me crash on their couches. I have no people in Philadelphia, and Lord knows I have no people. Nobody's got any people in New York City because, you know, everybody in New York City lives in a 200 square foot broom closet that they sleep standing up in. And I think I have people in Toronto. I don't know. We'll see. It'd be interesting. You know, I mean, some of this is just going to be like me putting things out on Twitter and finding out that everybody hates me, which is fine. I'm totally cool with that. But you know, like I had a plan. I had originally planned to go to Philly. But you know, it's just too much midweek. Also, there's a good chance there's going to be weather tomorrow. So, yeah. Plus, yeah, I mean, I've just got to be committed to my Sandwich Dragons, man. We're having a decent season. We need to grind this sucker out, and so I can help promote all my kids up to the travel team next year.
Glad to know that you're taking that more seriously and not missing training, like some fans have been critical of Tim Howard in the past, Mark. Okay, Mark, let's do predictions. Let's say, let's do, instead of individual results, let's say point totals. On Sunday morning this week, how many points will the Rapids have collected from the previous 7 days?
3.
You think they win against Cincinnati and then lose against Philly?
Probably, but I just want to say that 3 points. Because what if it's the other way around? Then I look like a genius.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll probably take 3 points as well. I think 2.5 to 3 points is probably right where, you know, if we were Vegas and we were betting men, Mark, I would probably put I would put the over under on, you know, in terms of the point totals. But, you know, I think if it's Sunday morning and the Rapids have gotten 4 points, then I think you're probably thinking job well done. That probably means that they stifled Philly enough and then they took care of business. You know, as we said, you know, a must win game or a, you had better win this game if you don't want to win the wooden spoon, against FC Cincinnati. One last thing to talk about, Mark, because I just got a notification on my phone. There's a report on a source from ESPN.com saying that it looks like Robin Fraser of Toronto FC is a front runner or is more seriously being considered for the Rapids job. You know, we kind of saw that there was a falling out last week with some reporting from some good people at The Athletic regarding Josh Wolf. Your thoughts on potentially Robin Fraser? Does this move the needle at all for you? I'm surprised at how much rumblings there have been, given I think how much time Porrick Smith has to make this decision. They don't really need to make any, like, they're not in a position where they need to or really can blow and rebuild this team up in the summer. Like, this is a move that, like, they could announce in August and then really get going in September and be okay for me. Like, I don't think they needed to hire somebody in an effort to try and salvage this season or to try and makeshift with an old team as they rebuild on the fly. Your thoughts on all of that, the word salad, and Robin Fraser potentially wearing burgundy and blue?
I'm a big fan of Robin Fraser. He made my list of 12 most likely candidates to be the head coach for the Colorado Rapids. I think we talked about him a couple podcasts ago that his only knock on his career is that he had a rough go of it when he was with Chivas USA. But then again, everybody has a rough go of it with Chivas USA. I like him a lot. I think he'd be a great hire. I do have concerns about that whole debacle that we didn't talk about a week ago, that there were rumors that Josh Wolf was approached by the Colorado Rapids, but they could not offer him the amount of money that he wanted, and they don't have that much on hand, which is a weird...
This is the problem when you're still paying two other coaches who aren't working for you.
I mean, hypothetically, but there's no salary cap for coaches. I mean, it's just, you know, you call up Uncle Stan and you're like, yo, you know, it's going to cost a little bit more money to get the coach we want.
And the Uncle Stan says, who is this?
Right. I know. I don't think the team works that way. I think the team generally works in, you know, we'll never be privy to the financials of the Colorado Rapids, but the simple sense I have of how the Colorado Rapids and the Nuggets and the Avalanche are run is that you can afford to take a small loss on those teams, an operating loss per year of $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, as long as the value of the club is appreciating from year to year. So that if Uncle Stan buys the club for $40 million or $60 million, whatever he bought it for, and he gets a sweet deal on the land and in order to build
Dick's Sporting Goods Park, then, you know, he sells it 10 or 15 or 20 years later and he gets $500 million back. And he makes the profit not on the fact that the team makes money from year to year, but the fact that the value of the item and the land that it's on go up.
Yep.
But that only works if you don't lose scads of money every year. And the only way you lose scads of money every year is if you do irresponsible things like fire three coaches in one calendar year who you owe $3 million apiece to, right? That's the way that that doesn't work, which is why the Rapids are – it's probably true that the Rapids are trying to cut costs and get a coach for a smaller amount of money. My guess is that Pablo Mascherini was making just under $1 million, that Anthony Hudson was making just under $1 million, and that the Rapids are trying to get someone for about $500,000 a year to be their head coach. Those are ground guesses based on the going rates for coaches that are known.
Yeah.
But those are guesses.
And then two data points that we do have, Mark. The option that Tata Martino turned down for Atlanta United for this season to take the job with the Mexican national team as he's preparing for the Gold Cup would have been, prior to bonuses, about $2 million and change. And then we know, albeit with him being technical director, general manager, and head coach, the last year that Bruce Arena was with the LA Galaxy, that total sum in compensation that did include performance bonuses as well was just over $4 million USD. So, you know, you figure, okay, just a head coach at the best in one of the richest teams in MLS making $2 million. You know, you figure Bruce Arena with a handful of jobs, you know, with his fingerprints over everything with the LA Galaxy was making $4 million. I'd imagine Bob Bradley's probably in the multi-millions. I would imagine, you know, Peter Vermees is probably comfortably six figures as well. So, you know, we get some data points that we can see clearly that, you know, the Rapids aren't spending a whole bunch of money to bring in a Jose Mourinho or a Zinedine Zidane or trying to, you know, entice, not N'Golo Kanté, the Spurs manager who supposedly might be leaving after Champions League, whose name's escaping
Pochettino.
Pochettino, excuse me. Yeah, so they're not dealing with that kind of money. I do think it is a bad look for the Rapids if, you know, Josh Wolf wanted it, but was like, you know, I don't want it for that amount of money, or I want a little bit more security because I know that, you know, if things don't go well by 2021, that I'm going to be fired. You know, I've already said that I like Robin Fraser. I think after Zabe Sarakin left MLS, he's probably the best assistant on the market right now. I think if Mark Dos Santos was still with LAFC and not the head coach of Vancouver Whitecaps, that's probably a coin flip between the two. I guess my question with Robin Fraser is, you mentioned with, you know, his one lone head coaching experience being with, you know, Chivas USA. Granted, you know, he was not put in a position to succeed. All of his other successes have been as the Robin to somebody else's Batman. You know, he was the assistant coach under Jesse Marsh, and then now obviously he's doing good stuff with Toronto under Greg Vanney. I'm just kind of wondering, you know, if he's just the, I can be a really, really, just because you're a really, really good assistant, or just because you're a good associate head coach, does not mean that you're going to be a good head coach. And that's maybe a concern, that's a concern that I have. That's something that if Robin Fraser were to take the job, I would ask him in the first media availability that I have with them. That's something that I would expect Porrick Smith to be mulling over and be discussing. So those are my concerns with Robin Fraser. I still think that he is a viable candidate and a candidate worth taking a chance on. I also think at this point, Mark, that I wonder with the money constraints that they have and who would potentially want to take this job, I'm not sure how many other options Porrick Smith has right now if he's going for somebody who is in the American soccer landscape. You know, in terms of the only big rumors that we've seen right now have been guys who are in MLS with US soccer or have been around that space. If he was looking for somebody maybe he knew in Ireland or somebody with the recent connections the club has made in South America, I'd imagine those opportunities would open up more later in the summer just because of how those parts of the world end up working. But, you know, again, this isn't a decision that I think the Rapids need to rush on, but if they end up getting their guy and they liking it, we'll see. You know, if I had to choose, you know, if you asked me a month ago or even the day after Hudson got fired, you know, if I had to choose right now, all other things being equal between Robin Fraser and Josh Wolf, I'd probably take Robin Fraser. I think that's it for us, Mark. Am I missing anything? Did I forget anything? Shall we get out of here?
No, I'll just, you know, riffing off of that point, like, I am all in for a new coach with an identity. And I think I made a big list of coaches that I thought were a good idea. And the one unifying thing is that I think all of them have a track record and a sense of creating an identity for a team. I also am not all in necessarily on it being a quote unquote Rapids way friendly mentality and idea for a team. I just want a coach who understands the system, how to get the players to play in the system, and has a track record of winning with players and systems. It does not matter how they play as long as they have a history of having a way of playing.
Hashtag Rapids Thug Life, maybe. I don't know. Okay. All right.
Turn of thug life.
All right, let's get out of here. Listeners, follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard. Check out our written musings on the PIDs at the Denver Post and at lastwordonsoccer.com. Hit us up on Twitter, the podcast, at Rapids96Podcast. If you want to send us a question, use the hashtag AskHTHL. If you want to get in touch in more long form, or you've got a question that extends beyond 280 characters, feel free to email us at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to us and find us wherever you get your podcatchers. Holler at us if we're not on a platform that you'd prefer to find us on. If you want a special deal on the digital content at the Denver Post, sports or otherwise, head on over to denverpost.com/HTHL, all lowercase. Check us out at patreon.com/Rapids96Podcast, or just search Holding the High Line on Patreon, and we're the first thing that comes up. We're still doing our sales with the mugs and the stickers and everything. So if you want suboptimal, depressing mugs, you can give us $30 for those, $5 for the stickers, or $5 for a continuous sponsorship. And we are looking at getting other swag for those of you who want something different, already have a mug, or don't care for the current mugs that we have. With that, listeners, we will see you next week as the Rapids head towards the Gold Cup break, and hopefully, a continuation of the current form they're on. We'll see you then.
Buy my mug!